Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Shelter in Place, my home office in Portland. And Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal is with us, co-chair, along with Mark Pocan of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. She also represents the 7th District of Washington, the Seattle area, more or less. And her website is Jayapal, J-A-Y-A-P-A-L, .house.gov. And you can tweet her at Rep. Jayapal. Representative Jayapal, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. It's always good to be with you.
Thank you. Representative Jayapal, this morning you were on the phone with the Senate leadership, Democratic Senate leadership. I'm curious your thoughts on where we're at, how we're doing, you know, how the nation is going forward. B, this new stimulus package. Donald Trump wants a couple $100 billion that apparently is specifically to pass out to big banks. I know that the Democrats have an alternative plan. You want to tell us about these things?
Yeah, so just in terms of where the nation is, we're being hit incredibly hard all over the country. Of course, Washington State was first, and in some ways, I think we have done a better job than many, many other parts of the country because we implemented restrictions on staying home early. But you see the devastation in New York and in the South, and the death toll is continuing to rise. So this is tough. On top of that, the latest unemployment numbers that just came out, another 6.6 million unemployment claims. That's on top of 10 million in the last 2 weeks. So we're now at about 16.5 million unemployment claims, which is enormous. I mean, that devastation is enormous. So we in Congress have passed three packages now, relief packages. It's disaster relief. That's what it is. And it totals about $3.5 trillion, which may sound like a lot, but honestly, Tom, it's not. It's not compared to the scale of the crisis. Economists are projecting that we're going to see depression-level unemployment, and that's something that we have not seen in this country. I mean, unless you're extremely on in your years, we don't have very many people who have lived through that. So this is a new world, and it is not going to be turning on a switch and being able to go back to work, even when we get through the surge times, because about 50 to 90% of people, depending on how lucky or unlucky or good we are at following the restrictions, will stay uninfected. And that means that as long as you have a big uninfected population, you are at risk for a second and even a third wave of infection. So we're going to have a widespread program of testing and contact tracing and public health protocols and investments in public health systems across the country if we ever want to try to get people back to work. So our packages have focused on getting relief, but that relief is taking too long. We've done some very good things. The best thing, in my opinion, has been the dramatic expansion of the unemployment insurance system, unemployment benefits. We extended the time period. We added an additional $600 at the federal level so that you would get to about 100% of payroll for most workers. But the unemployment systems are not designed to deal with so many claims. And disinvestment by the federal government has meant that people have been cutting back on the staff that process these claims. The computer systems are old. And there are a lot of people going into the unemployment system who have never had to go into the unemployment system. The other thing we did in the package is we put $350 billion into forgivable loans for small businesses, which is theoretically a good idea, and they're forgivable if you hire back your payroll, which is what we want to do. We want to keep people on payroll. We want to prevent layoffs and keep paychecks going in. But the problem is that we're using big banks to get that money out. The theory behind that was the distribution is better than trying to have a choke point at the SBA. But now these big banks are holding us hostage and saying, well, unless you release all the restrictions, we don't want to participate. Or they're just not able to process these loans quickly. So the help is not getting to people. And we have people in Washington state anyway, who have been without a paycheck for at least a month because the layoffs started earlier here. And when you have, you know, half of the population not even having $400 in their bank account for an emergency, this is devastating. So we have to do a lot more, and we have to be very bold. And my proposal that I'm rolling out today is a guaranteed federal paycheck program. So we would guarantee paychecks for businesses of all sizes. And there would be serious conditions attached to that, sort of like what we did in the airline part of the last package we passed. No stock buybacks, limits on executive pay, no union busting, you know, all those things, a worker on the board. But we would actually guarantee paychecks because it will be a quicker way to get money out, and it will keep people from having to go on unemployment and prevent these mass layoffs that we're going to continue to see otherwise. Similar to what has happened in Denmark and some other places.
Yeah. I should add, by the way, that you're with us taking calls from our listeners. So if you have a question for Congresswoman Jayapal or Representative Jayapal, feel free to give us a shout. Representative Jayapal, I just this morning caught a story on Business Insider. The headline is Spain is moving to establish permanent basic income in the wake of the coronavirus epidemic. Nadia Calviño, their Minister for Economic Affairs, their equivalent of the Treasury Secretary, said that this is part of a barrage of policies. And she said that the government, quote, hopes it would become a permanent instrument. We're going to do it as soon as possible so it can be useful, not just for this extraordinary situation and that it remains forever. It's a quote from her. The country's Social Security minister, I guess he's sort of like HHS or something, I'm not sure, said that this measure would represent, quote, a permanent safety net for the most vulnerable. Now, it has not yet passed Spain's parliament, but this is what the government wants to do. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think that what we are seeing is how desperately we need these long-term solutions and how whatever we put in place now, we need to think about many of these things as becoming permanent solutions. And so I think that this is something that we're going to have to deal with around healthcare. As you know, I've been the lead sponsor of Medicare for All. And there are ways right now that we have a proposal to expand Medicare for everybody who's unemployed, and then to expand Medicaid for everybody who is uninsured and near the poverty line, because the idea that we would not be able to have not only free testing and free treatment for the virus, which we should have, but also that we need to have a system that can deal with the health consequences of this virus, which, by the way, are substantial. So I think that this is really, really important for us to think short term, but also in the long term, what survives.
Great. And we've got calls from all over the country for you, so we will pick those up in just a moment. Representative Pramila Jayapal is with us. She is the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. She represents the 7th District of the state of Washington, the Seattle area generally, in the U.S. House of Representatives. Jayapal, J-A-Y-A-P-A-L, .house.gov.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And you can tweet her at Rep. Jayapal. Paul, watching us on Free Speech TV in Lucerne, California. Paul, you are on the air with Representative Jayapal.
First of all, I could thank you for being an awesome representative.
And thank
I'd like
you.
To talk about, you're welcome. The Green New Deal, everybody's talking about it. Well, with the stay-at-home order and all the businesses shutting down, I read an article 3 days ago that 10 million premature asthma deaths have been prevented. Seems like a big deal to me. And that's all because of the stay-at-home order and businesses not operating and not polluting the air. Well, if that's true, we're going to end up saving lives in the long run because of this epidemic, because of the 10 million premature asthma deaths that were stopped. So this is a peek into what a green future would look like for us. Look, the dolphins are back in the canals. People are not dying of asthma just in a short time. Just from the
Let's get Representative Jayapal's response to this, Paul. Thank you.
Yeah, no, Paul, I noticed that our Seattle skyline was crystal clear. And, you know, all of the pollution and other things that we typically see not there, we're hearing the same thing about fish and our wildlife. And so I do think that we are seeing the effects of reducing emissions right now. But I would just say that the other side of the story you're telling is that 70% of fatalities in Chicago are African Americans. 81% of fatalities in Milwaukee County, African Americans. Many low-income people, you know, the research shows that low-income folks have about a 2 times the rate of fatalities as others because of the chronic health conditions that have existed. Not all of that is going to go away because people are staying home or because emissions are down. So we really have this situation where delayed care in this country, lack of universal health care, has meant, as well as people living near toxic waste dumps or highways and breathing emissions, getting asthma, all those chronic health conditions are far more prevalent in low-income people, folks of color, and those are the people that are actually getting the virus and then dying from it. And so I think you're right that we're seeing what happens, even just in a short period of time, when we reduce emissions. But there is another side to this, which is that a lot of these fatalities and a lot of the consequences of this, even for people who get it, have been hospitalized and then recover, are going to be terrible. They are showing now that many younger people under 50 have gotten the virus, have been hospitalized, and that there are long-term consequences for lung damage and other things for people who get it. So kind of, you know, two pieces to this. You're right, and we got a lot to worry about still.
Yeah. But if we were to make the transition to really good public transportation infrastructure and electric vehicles, we would see clear skies and less traffic on the roads, just like now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Step by step. Hey, we just put up a new video, you can find it over at tomhartman.com, talking about the relationship between Fox News, Rupert Murdoch, and basically the whole right-wing hate agenda on Hispanics, by and large, saying that Hispanics are changing our culture. Really? This is European culture. I mean, you know, the Mayans and Aztecs got replaced by the Spaniards, remember? They're mostly Catholic. I don't see the cultural difference here. But Fox sure does. And also pointing out that Kevin Rudd, the former prime minister of Australia, calls out Rupert Murdoch and says, you know, he's, quote, a cancer on Australian democracy. Well, apparently a cancer on American democracy as well. So you can check out this new video over at tomhartman.com. Representative Pramila Jayapal, the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, taking your calls. Dave in Federal Way, Washington, you're on the air with Representative Jayapal.
Yeah, hey, Representative Jayapal. I live in King County. I live in Federal Way. And I'm in this situation where I believe, this is just my opinion, that the company that I worked for they sent me home without pay, okay? And they put a disciplinary report in my record without me even knowing it. And they basically said I had COVID-19, which I do not. I was screened and I didn't have enough symptoms to progress to the higher level of screening. Now, I believe this is a reprisal for something that happened earlier, right? And I called an attorney on it, an employment attorney, and she told me that there are a lot of cases like this, like mine, that sound similar to mine, but they're referring them to the governor's office. So I guess my question is, are you aware that there is no, like, standards for this sort of thing yet?
You know, that's a great question. I am not aware of standards for it, and it seems to me that that would be, you know, the attorney general potentially could, if there were a series of those cases, could take some of those cases up. Good idea to go to the governor's office. And I will also mention this to my folks at the governor's office and see if we can highlight this issue. I can see employers, bad employers, low road employers using this as an opportunity to try to get rid of employees they don't like, which is essentially, I think, what you're saying. So I do think we need to figure out how to have some protections in there so that that doesn't happen. I know there's also some companies that are using this as an opportunity for union busting, right? To fire the folks that have been leaders in trying to organize a union or argue for better benefits. So thanks for raising it. I'll take it up and see what I can find out.
Michael in Bronx, New York. You're on the air with Representative Jayapal.
Hello, Representative Jayapal. Great to speak with you. As an African-American, I'm being empathetic with Chinese-Americans. And at least here in New York, there have been an increase of racial attacks towards the Chinese-Americans, and a lot of which due to Mr. Trump's tweet and rhetoric, falsely calling this a Chinese Kung Fu virus. Even FBI reports state that there's been an increase of hate crimes towards Chinese Americans. I can attest that there have been physical attacks towards these innocent people and even resulting in casualties due to the severity of the attacks. That even in Chinatown, Manhattan, there's been a heavy presence of police officers. And as a result, all the Chinese restaurants here in New York have closed down.
Thanks, Michael. I mean, I think that this is a huge issue for the Congressional Asian Pacific American Caucus. Grace Meng in New York and Judy Chu in California and I have been really leading a charge to fight back against this. We've written letters to the president. We've issued statements. We have been very clear that this cannot continue. This is, in fact, there was new research showing that the virus was probably brought to New York from Europe. But this is not a time to think about where this virus is originating. Everybody has it. It's a pandemic. And it does not do any good. And in fact, it's incredibly harmful. People have died. Asian Americans across the country have died, actually, because of hate violence related to this. So you are right to be disturbed by it. I thank you for that. And this is something that every single one of us should be speaking out against. The racism that is coming out from these stereotypes and the incorrect information that the president continues to put out there when he calls it a Kung Fu virus or Chinese virus or any of those things. It's just outrageous, and we got to speak out against it.
Do you expect that there's any way to successfully push back on Trump's use of racism and xenophobia to promote his political agenda in the context of this thing?
I think it's very, very difficult. You may have seen an article today that he is using the virus to essentially do what he's been trying to do for a long time and shut off asylum on the southern border. We have been working very hard on the immigration front, and you may have seen that actually we sent a letter, I think it was a week ago, to DHS about getting these detainees out of the immigration detention facilities because there are outbreaks there. And ICE just announced 2 days ago that it's going to start that process. We have a whole bill around what that looks like to use alternatives and get folks out into safety and really attack that in a big way.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Coming up in the science revolution is Mad King Trump deciding which states will live and which states will die. Associate Professor of Economics Pavlina Cherneva is here to talk about what would FDR do about COVID-19. The last Democratic governor of Alabama, Don Siegelman, drops by to talk about how prisons are handling the coronavirus and what they should do. In Geeky Science, attorney and regulatory policy advocate with Public Citizen Amit Narang is here asking why Trump is fighting clean car standards instead of the coronavirus. Check it all out wherever fine podcasts are available. Dan, in Denver, Colorado, you are on the air with Representative Jayapal.
Will the Democrats stand firm and say there will be no additional bills passed until a national mail-in ballot election bill has passed? And it must also include a very easy and liberally applied online and or phone-in registration requirement. Otherwise, we will see the largest and farthest-reaching voter suppression in history. And it needs to be a separate standalone bill so it can't be watered down, and so the Republicans will be forced to fight against the basic right to vote.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Dan, that this has got to be a top priority, especially after the mess we saw in Wisconsin. And you know that Trump and the Republicans have doubled down on fighting a transition to vote by mail. I come from Washington State. You in Colorado, you have a great vote by mail system as well. And, you know, we were actually in the midst of the pandemic just hitting us in Washington State when our primary election happened, and we had the largest record voter turnout, actually. And so we were able to get the election done in spite of everything that was going on around us. So it is a priority for us to do two things. One, make sure that every state, all the 2020 federal elections are protected and move to vote by mail with the option for in-person voting for those who can't get to vote by mail, which there are some people for various reasons that can't vote by mail. And then also to put an additional $3.6 billion into states being able to do what they need to do to transition their systems. That has been a priority of ours. We were not able to get it in the last bill. And I know that this is something that we're pushing very hard. I think the challenge with saying we're not going to pass any bill unless we get this is, well, you see the devastation around us. But I think we are getting to that point on some of these things that Republicans are refusing to do that are going to really affect our democracy and our public health, frankly. Absurd that Wisconsin is, you know, having people go out to the polls to vote in the midst of a stay-home pandemic. So we're on it.
Yeah, and let me add, for people who are not familiar with Washington State, you said that you were able to do your primary just as the pandemic was hitting Washington State. And that's because Washington State, like Oregon and Utah and Hawaii, is all mail-in voting.
Exactly.
So therefore, you know, nobody had to show
exactly.
up.
Exactly. And so ballots had already gone out. Nobody had to show up. You know, we're also used to it, right? But this is the first time we've done right. a vote-by-mail, an actual primary election. We used to have the caucus system. And so we were a little bit worried that moving from a caucus to a primary would be challenging. But again, the vote by mail made all of that good.
Yeah, just super easy. Bruce in Columbus, Ohio. Bruce, you're on the air with Representative Jayapal.
Well, thank you for being here. My question is, Trump has fired the National Intelligence Inspector General and the Stimulus Economic Recovery Inspector General. I assume he's going to leave those positions open so he can't be policed. What can you do to make sure those positions are filled and not filled by a Trump lackey? Thank you very much. I'll listen off the air.
Yeah, thanks for the question. So one thing, we are trying to look into language that we could put into the bill that would prohibit Trump from using a signing statement, which is what he used last time, to just say, I'm not going to listen to the provisions that are in the bill. It's a little bit harder on the inspector general because those are positions that typically the administration hires. So can we make it subject to authorization of Congress? What are the different approaches we can take to this? Because this guy just has, he has no compunctions about doing anything that he wants. We already know from having impeached him that he does not believe in checks and balances or balance of powers at all. And a crisis is sort of the best time for him to move a lot of these things because everybody is focused on so many different pieces that have to happen in a crisis. One positive thing I would say is that I noticed that the polling is now starting to once again reflect that people know that he's not doing a good job in leading on this pandemic, and it's having disastrous consequences and fatalities because of it. So I do think people are starting to see that, but you know, we're looking at what provisions we can insert that he can't turn around with a signing statement, which is what he did last time.
Hal in Houston, Texas, you're on the air with Representative Jayapal.
Representative Jayapal, when we emerge from this crisis, and of course Congress will conduct hearings to investigate, do you know, think that from the results of these hearings that the recommendation is to either the current administration or the next administration is to reorganize, I guess, various, I would call it, health response agencies, including the CDC for themselves also? I guess the reason why I'm asking this question here is, I guess from gathering all the news about the craziness of the supply shortages of these PEPs, is that there was no coordination or no leadership.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's two things that you're pointing to. One is the president, the guy who's sitting in the White House or the woman in the future who's sitting in the White House, are they using the powers of the federal government to coordinate, to respond, to listen to science, and to utilize the agencies that are there in a good way? I would say the answer under this president is no. He said he's invoked the Defense Production Act, but his idea of doing that is, you know, some guy that he knows who's on the board of a big company calls up and says, hey, I can get you 10,000 masks. Well, that's not what we're talking about when we say invoke the Defense Production Act. We're talking about using it to compel domestic manufacture of those critical goods that we need, whether it's tests, swabs, gowns, masks, all of those things. And it means that some companies that had not been manufacturing those things would actually begin to retool their production lines to manufacture those things. That is very different than just saying, hey, is there some company out there who can give us a few things? That's not a coordinated response. The second piece you're pointing to is the investment in actual science-based research and competent people at these different agencies. And we have cut down his budget, and Republicans over the years, as well as Democrats, I will say, have invested in austerity politics. And it means that the IRS has many fewer staff, employment security has many fewer staff, state governments have been decimated, many in the South really decimated. And so you have a whole series of government agencies that don't have the staff that they need and have been sort of pillaged for people who actually believe in science and respond to research. And some of those people have been replaced with people who just have political agendas. So there's really two pieces here. And then I would add a third, which is that our systems are patchworked. They are not set up to deal with a crisis like this. I'll give you an example of healthcare. We have a very patchwork, bad, for-profit healthcare system that does not allow us to coordinate our government response quickly, to make sure that we're not getting price gouged, to make sure that, you know, vaccine development actually is supported by the federal government, and then the results of that are shared with everybody and not just used for profits for the biggest CEOs of those drug companies. And we can't actually make sure that we're investing in hospital beds and, you know, capacity that we need versus administration costs of the current for-profit system. So on many levels, we need different systems that will support and engender equity and equality, income, gender, racial justice, all of those things, but across the board, give people more opportunity to be healthy and economically secure, which then allows them to weather better a crisis like this.
Mark in Salem, Oregon, you're on the air with Representative Jayapal.
Hello. Given the discussion, it seems as though really massive testing is one of the fastest ways to understand the spread of this thing, especially among the asymptomatic. And so my question is, I haven't heard anything about a massive increase in acquiring these tests. And what's more expensive, massive testing or a total economic collapse?
Well, you've asked a rhetorical question. There's no question that testing is what we should be doing, and that's where the federal government, again, has failed us on any kind of coordination and compelling of production using the Defense Production Act to compel the manufacture of things like swabs. I mean, when we say testing, what that involves is the components of a test kit, right? And the things that we're running out of right now are primarily swabs. So we just, I know our University of Washington just ordered 80,000 swabs from China, tested the swabs, found them to be good. They now have another order on, and they believe they can get a couple million swabs. We should not be dependent on China for the production of swabs. We can do that right here in the United States. Same thing with reagents. You know, there are tests going on right now to see. We have a study here at the UW that is also funded by the Gates folks, that they have developed a home-based testing kit. And the benefit of that is that instead of those swabs that are called nasolaryngeal swabs that go up your nose and then down your throat, quite painful, you can't do that yourself. You need somebody else to do that for you. These swabs just go into the nose, and then you can self-swab. You can put it in a little test tube that's got a medium in it, and you can send it back, and it can be analyzed, and you can have results within a day or 2 days, depending on how long it takes to get the test back to the lab. And so that would be a very important investment in getting community spread results. So figuring out how far has this thing spread. You're not just testing the most vulnerable or the people that have symptoms. We know that this is an asymptomatic disease, that you can have no symptoms and you can still be transmitting. It's why staying home is so important. But we have no real sense of what the percentage of the disease is in the community. And if we want to send people back to work, we are going to have widespread testing and then what's called contact tracing. What that means is if you get the virus and we discover that you have it, we have to then, public health officials have to be able to trace back every contact that you, the person who has a virus, has had over the last 7 days, so that, or the time that you've been infected, so that we can then immediately isolate not only you, but also isolate those other people that have gotten the virus. And so that means that that's going to have to be a cycling process. You're going to have to be testing people regularly, not just once, but regularly if they're going to work, making sure that they, if they're in contact with people, that you're isolating those people. So 150% we got to invest in widespread testing, contact tracing, and we're not going to be able to get back to work and get the economy going without doing that.
We have calls from Minnesota, Iowa, Michigan, Ohio, Illinois, California. Representative Pramila Jayapal is taking your calls here on the Tom Hartman program. Roberta in Maple Grove, Minnesota, you're on the air with Representative Jayapal.
I just wanted to know if it's true that the post office is not being given any support throughout this, even though, of course, they've been hit with this too. And being as how, if we want to go to by mail voting, we really, really need them. Is there anything in the stuff that you're putting forth to protect them and so that we'll have them if we're able to get the voting switched to in mail voting?
Yes, super important question. They were left out. We did try to get that in there and we were not able to do that, but we are still trying. The reality is that the Postal Service is running out of cash, just like the transit agencies. And so we did take care of the transit agencies, giving them operating money, which federal dollars are not usually able to be used for operating for transit. But we built that into the package, thanks to DeFazio, chairman of the Transportation Committee, one of the founders, by the way, of the Congressional Progressive Caucus way back in 1991, great ally for progressive issues. Trump has said basically postal workers don't deserve a financial lifeline. It's absurd. And then he blames Amazon and others, and he claims that the postal office's woes are self-inflicted when that is just not the case. And so he actually personally intervened to strip the democratically proposed postal rescue program from the last bill that we passed, the $2.2 trillion bill. And so he's been lying for years, actually, and saying that the Postal Service is losing money because it's contracting with Amazon and other private corporations. And actually, that's just not true. They actually saw an increase in revenue from some of those contracts. And many companies are now using the Postal Service to do their delivery. So this is just a really important, we're going to have to try one more time to keep these things in. And I think across the board, Democrats are just going to have to play more hardball, to be honest.
Stephen in Pataskala, Ohio, if I'm saying that right, you're on the air with Representative Jayapal.
Why are we on a war footing with Venezuela, with U.S. warships and gunboats approaching and threatening on provenly fake drug charges against the Maduro administration? How is Venezuela our business besides our oil interest, per se?
I and Mark Pocan, my Progressive Caucus co-chair, we were amongst the group of people who said that the United States' role should not be to participate in overthrows, but that we should actually be trying to help ensure that the people of Venezuela get to pick their next leader. And so this has been controversial in some places because nobody's endorsing Maduro. But I think it is really important to remember that dictators that the United States has overthrown but then sought to impose our will on the people with other people, with other leaders, those leaders have sometimes turned out to be worse dictators. So we should just make sure that we are doing what we can to intervene and get other international agencies and international coalition, international organizations and nations to be a part of that solution. So I don't think it's that we have no role to play in Venezuela, but I think that we have to be very careful about what role we play.
But I see that Jonathan in Seattle wanted advice. He's an independent contractor on getting unemployment out of the CARES Act. Do you have some thoughts on that real quick?
Yeah, absolutely, Jonathan. So we set up a new program within the unemployment division that should cover gig workers and other independent contractors. And so if you're having trouble with that, just call my office, call my Seattle office, and we'll walk you through how to do that.
That is great. Representative Jayapal, we really appreciate you dropping by and doing these national town hall meetings with us. I wanted to thank you so much. You're doing such great work in Congress, fighting for all of us.
You bet. Thanks, Tom. And, you know, thanks so much for having me on. I always enjoy it. And your callers are always asking great questions.
Well, the door is always open. Representative Pramila Jayapal, the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. You know, a lot of us have settled into a new routine. Those of us who are sheltering in place or staying home, not going out. And there's a downside and an upside, I suppose. One of the potential upsides, I think, going forward is that we might see an enhancement in gender equality, not just in the workplace, but also at home. Dads are stuck with their kids and they're doing homework and things like that and housework. More flexible work arrangements. If these stick, that will be a good thing for working parents where you've got, you know, both mom and dad in the workplace. What has your experience been so far of this? And how do you think things might change going forward? Or how do you think they should change going forward? You know, are you all excited about working from home? Or do you really miss getting dressed up and going to the office and hanging out with people? You know, I think one of the things that we're finding from all of this is that a lot of stuff that goes on at work, you know, whether it's the office or the assembly line or the supermarket or wherever it may be that you work, one of the main things that happens there, and it probably occupies about half the total time we're at work, obviously it varies from job to job, or as much as half of the time, is social interaction, which we're all kind of missing right now. Although, you know, we're figuring out how to use Zoom and FaceTime and things like that to get it. So I'm just curious, you know, your thoughts on that. Feel free to give us a call. Where do you think this is going to, in terms of, you know, work, home, all that kind of stuff? Barbara in Kingston, New York. Hey, Barbara, what's on your mind today?
I was an innkeeper, and I can't work from home. How it's affecting me is we had a created a situation where people could have a long breakfast, and we encouraged people to have conversation. So we had people come from all over the world, and what I miss is the information, because you could find out, well, what's really going on in your country, and also exchange about what's really going on here. And I feel like all of us being isolated in our little bubbles, that's no longer possible. You know, for example, we had guests come from Greece after that fell apart. And to find, you know, I'd ask them, well, what's it like in, over there? And they're like, all the old people have lost their pension, you know, which somehow didn't really hit home, the extremity about how bad that crash was over there. So that's what I miss, is communication other than it all going through the internet. You know?
Yeah. Okay, Barbara, thank you. Thank you for sharing that story with us. Appreciate it. Bill in Richmond, Virginia. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind today?
The reason I had called was this, because I've heard all this talk about Wisconsin and the thing about how they wouldn't change the date of the election. Well, we've got primaries in Virginia coming up on June 9th, and our stay-at-home policy goes through June 10th. And Governor Northam and Attorney General Mark Herring have both said they're not going to change those dates. You know, my feeling is people to go in to vote that day would be in the same danger as people are in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and perhaps even a greater danger, because as time goes on, there more and more people get infected. I mean, you've got a Democratic governor and lieutenant governor. Are they not sending ballots out to everybody in the state for vote by mail? Absentee ballots?
No, they don't have vote by mail here. Oh, they never have. Oh, they do have absentee.
Well, no,
that's
what I'm talking about. They call it absentee ballots, but it's a ballot that you vote by mail.
One of the points that the Attorney General brought up, and I looked it up to see if it's true, he went through and said, well, in the War of 1812, when the White House was burning, they still had elections. Civil War, they had elections. Now, the soldiers were allowed to vote by mail, I think, then, but during the Spanish flu. Ironically, the protocol they had was the same thing. Everybody that went to vote had to wear a mask, because I know it supposedly won't protect you from somebody, you know, it won't keep you from getting it. But so that way, that's the only way you could vote. And they did have the spacing, believe it or not. So this isn't something totally new. And in World War II, FDR wouldn't change the election dates in World War II. So I guess if it's going to go by, you know, past experience, that there probably should be elections. But the only thing that I do have a problem with is no one has addressed this issue in Virginia. Of course, I know it's
The Virginia government needs to be sending out an absentee ballot to every single registered voter in the state. And Bill, I encourage you to contact the governor's office and register your objections. If that's not the case, I can't say that it's not. I don't know, you know, I don't live in Virginia. I don't pay that much attention to Virginia politics. It may well be that they're doing that and you're just not aware of it. Let's check our facts here before we jump. Ralph Northam. Rick in Woodstock, Illinois, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Rick, what's up?
I've been going to a store and shop, and, you know, you go in there with your mask and everything, but the people that work in there, they ain't wearing masks or anything. I just don't understand how they think this thing is going to end when everybody's doing whatever they want. You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, and they're endangering you. I mean, what we know now is that basically there's a breath cloud around everyone that extends several feet out from them. The alarming one that I saw this morning, because when Louise and I are out walking, very often joggers will run by us. And it's the joggers are breathing so hard, they're blowing out a breath cloud that could go 10, 12 feet around them. And it's more like coughing. So, you know, you've got workers in the stores who are breathing and they've got this cloud of virus around them if they happen to be asymptomatic. And of course, there's no way to know whether they are infected or not, because Donald Trump never thought to provide us with test kits. So all I can say, Rick, is that hopefully Governor Pritzker will amend his order for Illinois, for the state of Illinois, to include the fact that anybody in public has to be wearing a mask. I believe that Oregon just did that. Pretty sure that New York City, that Bill de Blasio did that in New York City. I think that this is coming to individual states around the country. And of course, you know, Fauci and company day before yesterday said that we should all be doing this. And then, you know, Trump made light of it and said, you know, he doesn't want to mess up his hair or his, he doesn't want to wipe off his bronzer, I guess, is probably his biggest concern that the orange goop he puts on his face every day.
Yeah, I just want to say one thing is that, you know, I want to hug my granddaughter again. I want to go see her and hug her again and that. And with this, it's going to be a long time. And let me just say one more thing to everybody. Remember, creeps hang with creeps. Yeah. Thank you, Tom.
There you go. You're welcome. Pence and Trump. Yeah, amen. Marcia in Winter Park, Florida. Hey, Marcia, what's on your mind today?
It's like we're all in the fog of war. And if you're a gamer, it's like you can only see so far. There's no visibility. So predictions are pretty hard. Yesterday, when Bernie quit, I was in the depths of evil. The world is too evil for anything good to survive. That was a terrible day. Mm-hmm. And I'm past that now. I live in Florida, so I think about the hurricane season. When the data that they collect during hurricane season, based on atmospheric conditions after this shutdown where we've turned off the lights worldwide for, 50%, 75% of the time?
Right.
That will be awesome to find out what it's done.
Yeah, it will be. Tracy in Los Angeles. Hey, Tracy, what's on your mind today?
My concern actually is the fact that on social media, I'm seeing a lot of people that are sort of looking to the end of April as being the panacea that we're going to open up this country and we're going to be able to get back to normal. And until people really understand that unless everyone in this country has been tested, where we can determine who is negative, who is asymptomatic, it's just unfathomable that anyone would consider, let's say, opening up Disneyland. How can you do that? How can you open up Magic Mountain? How can you literally say, let's get the kids back to school? You don't know if the teacher has been tested and if she's negative or asymptomatic. How can you say that let's open up LA Live and have basketball games at the sport? I mean, there's just so much that we don't know about this virus. And for people to really think that we're going to have this, I survived the pandemic and all I got was this lousy T-shirt that I'm actually seeing on some of the social media. People want to get back to pre-pandemic and understanding that there has really been a fundamental change. This, we cannot look at it that until we have accurate numbers, accurate data where everyone has been tested. And that's just even in California. There are 40 million Americans here. I mean, 40 million California. I don't think we've tested 2 million at this point. So how can we even conceive of having baseball games, basketball games, football games? What about the workforce? What about people that have more than 10 employees? We can't even consider Congress going back. How can Congress sit in? It's just beyond the pale with me. And I don't understand why someone isn't looking beyond what we're currently experiencing and saying, yes, we want to get our country back. We want to get economically back on the footing. But we can't do that until we're able to really resolve this situation, this virus here. I mean, there's so much about it that's not known.
I think that there's two things going on here, Tracy. The first is that I believe that the Trump administration has agreed for a long time now with the Boris Johnson administration in the UK, that the solution to this is herd immunity. That is, you know, once the vast majority of people in the country have been exposed to the disease, about half of people who are exposed get sick, 20% of the people who get sick end up in the hospital. 2% of the people who get sick die or are exposed die. We don't know yet exactly which of those numbers it is. That's really the best way to do it, is to just simply create herd immunity. And you do that by saying, to hell with the old people, to hell with the sick people, to hell with people with hypertension and pre-existing conditions. We're just going to let them die, number one. And number two, Donald Trump's hotels are hemorrhaging money right now. He's had to close all but two of them. And the two that are open are doing no business functionally at all. And he wants the country back working because he wants people to stay in his hotels again. He wants to start making money again. So I think those are the two big variables that are happening, Tracy, and neither, frankly, being acknowledged by the American press. And frankly, you know, we need to. Tom in Hudsonville, Michigan. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today?
Oh, well, great program, first of all. And I just wish Trumpsters would listen to your program so they'd, you know, better understand why Iraq would be a better president than their Lion King. And I think that's why Biden should win, and I think Bernie would win. But my question is, when Mnuchin just promised a total transparency of the $10 trillion plan, I wanted to ask you, would you or someone you know ask a reporter to ask him on national television, how can we find that data? Like Dr. Wolf, you or me, showing exactly who is directly pocketing the Fed stimulus money.
I think what he has said is that after the first of the year, after the election, you'll be able to see where this money went. There's going to be, you know, a six-month lag time from the time that the monies are dispersed, and it's going to take a couple months to get the money out. And so the other question for Steve Mnuchin was, you know, when you kicked thousands and thousands, maybe tens of thousands, I don't recall the exact number, but when you kicked thousands and thousands of people out of their homes in California, when you were running that bank in California and, you know, using illegal robo-signing to do it, when you were referred to as the foreclosure king, how much transparency were you providing? You know, that,
amen.
I would
amen.
Love to hear amen. Somebody ask that question.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Rick in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind today?
I was just confirming with a bus driver here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul area, that they do not have people entering by the front door where the bus driver is. There's a bar. So people enter the back door of the bus, and it's all free. And the only time that they end up going in the front door is because of they need a wheelchair.
Oh, interesting. Well, that's good. And they may well be doing that in Portland. Our friend whose husband is a bus driver, the last time that I think Louise spoke with her was maybe 2 weeks ago. And I don't know if their conversation got sufficiently granular to find out if that's what's going on in Portland, but just generally that the transit workers were concerned, shall we say. And, you know, which is a legitimate concern. Thanks for that, Rick. That's good news. That's very good news. And Craig, I think you've got some good news, too. Hey, Craig in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. What's up?
You were talking about the corporations and the companies having the employees do stuff they normally wouldn't do. And I work in human services in a group home, and they've come in now and said that I have to take the client's temperatures 2 to 3 times a shift. And I am very uncomfortable with that. Using old mercury thermometers.
Well, that was my question. You know, on Amazon for $30, you can buy a an infrared thermometer or ultraviolet or whatever it is. You hold it an inch away from the forehead and push a button, and it instantly tells you the temperature. It's very accurate. You know, they use them all around the world. Why don't they spend $30 and get you a thermometer that you don't have to stick inside people and disinfect
exactly.
stuff?
Exactly. Well, like I said, because they put more money into the starting up more group homes rather than taking care and the right equipment.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure they're taking good paychecks, too. Sean in Stamford, Connecticut. Hey, Sean, what's up?
You had a caller before named Scott, and he was talking about disabled individuals. I have the visually impaired. I also have CT. And I have friends who are also impaired. And I'm concerned about their health because, you know, luckily they're home right now, but if they get this, they can be seriously impacted by this. And as you're talking about rationing of health care, that really concerns me. You talked about mourning that because one of my friends is someone I've known since childhood, and she's, you know, been a wonderful part of my life. And I want to help her as much as I possibly can. So this really does concern me. And as far as mourning is concerned, I think we're also mourning about the everyday norms we used to go through. Go to the store, go, you know, go to the park. Now I got to be 6 feet away from someone, and that's hard.
Yeah, yeah. It's like normal life has been severely disrupted. And
yeah, and also I have a psych background, so I understand from that level as well. And I think you would understand that as, on that level too, I think. And it just really is amazing. I think also it happened so quickly. It wasn't like, you know, if we heard a month ago, and we went in as easy and slowly, then we could say, okay, do this, don't do that. It happened all at once.
Right. I got to move along to another caller here, Sean, but thank you for the call. That was very insightful. Patrick in Long Island, New York. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
I was very, very interested in what you said about the planet. I have been outdoors for most of the week, sitting on my front porch, waving at neighbors who I never saw before because they either were never home from work or they never ventured out. I took a ride to the beach because we're surrounded by water yesterday with my youthful and active 86-year-old mother, who we keep usually quarantined, but she had her mask, and people were enjoying the outdoors. And I hope, if anything, the scientists and the other people who study the atmosphere are measuring how much improvement there has been with the lack of human contribution, and we all take note of it.
That's going to be one of the big stories that comes out, and it's going to come out probably in about 2 weeks when the numbers start getting compiled. We already know from January and February that China's contribution to the worldwide pollution dropped dramatically. But now with Europe and the United States shut down, we're going to see, I think, a huge numbers coming out in March.
So the only pollution I see right now is what's coming out of Trump's mouth.
I love it.
Have a good day, Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Patrick. Bye-bye. You too. That was great. Bruce in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Bruce, what's on your mind?
Our point of optimism, you just spoke about it, but Abbott Labs has developed a FDA-approved COVID-19 test cartridge that returns a result in 5 to 13 minutes that you talked about. Right. It runs on a standardized diagnostic platform, of which 18,000 are currently out and in service. And they're relatively small, portable, not too expensive, and that's what the Trump administration doesn't want to distribute where it's needed most. They also have another larger testing platform that they can couple with this that will run 1 million tests a week, and they feel that they can do 5 million tests a month. So I just thought I would pass that along.
Yeah. Yeah, the bottom line of what we need here is testing, testing, testing. I mean, it's just that simple. I mean, this is why Germany is ahead of the curve. It's why Germany has such a lower death rate. It's because they actually know how many people are infected, because they've been testing people literally since January, just like South Korea has been. And South Korea has a really low death rate. You know, you've got two countries, more than two, actually. Singapore did it and Taiwan did it as well. So you've got four countries that jumped ahead of everybody else back in January when they knew this thing was coming, while Donald Trump was going golfing and holding rallies and talking about a Democrat hoax. That's how absurd it all is. Meanwhile, after the New York Times calls him out for being responsible for part of this crisis, Sean Hannity is having a meltdown and thinking about suing the liberal media. Right. Lamar in Tampa, Florida. Hey, Lamar, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? Hey, since I'm not a commentator on MSNBC, they're talking about if the Trump party is going to be a dynasty, and they were saying, and somebody was saying, well, this has always been the Republican Party. This isn't nothing new. It's just Trump, the guy who actually say all this stuff that they really wanted to hear. And they had the so-called good Republicans up there. Why is you a Republican, you know, the black Republicans or the so-called good Republicans, and they use the excuse of, well, we like, you know, the military and we want to spend conservatively. But as you see, all that's out the door. They were just excuses because he robbing from the military and they spending like crazy. And the Republican Party has always been, you know, intolerant to racism and all that stuff. And they in favor of that over those excuses that the so-called good Republicans was using to justify being a Republican.
Yeah, the whole thing about good Republicans is just like the thing about good cops in police departments, where there are bad cops and the good cops don't out them. It's the same kind of problem. It's tolerance of corruption. And the Republican Party is tolerating corruption. Many people in the Republican Party are enabling corruption, but the rest of them are just sitting back, sitting on their hands, keeping their mouths shut. The three monkeys, you know, see no evils, hear no evil, speak no evil. And it's just, this is like, this has got to be exposed and dealt with. I mean, we've got to figure out as a country how we're going to deal with this level of corruption.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, Jim Mattis is on the rounds for his book tour, And yeah. Like, he's using this code as far as, like, oh, we can't.
Yeah,
can't,
well, he's doing the same thing, you know, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. I mean, you know, about Trump, because he's afraid of Trump. Here you've got a general who's afraid of Donald Trump. That's a real sad commentary on the state of affairs. Lamar, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. And thank you all for being with us today. It's been a fascinating day. We've got another one lined up for you tomorrow. And so, you know, same bat time, same bat cave. But in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Democracy only works when you are registered to vote, your friends are registered to vote, and you're informed. So get out there, get active, tag, you're in. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.